You're listening to an encore presentation of The Money Hour with Tina Mitchell and Keelan Harvey.
Welcome to The Money Hour with host Tina Mitchell and co-host Keelan Harvey. Tina Mitchell, MLO 145420, and Keelan Harvey, MLO 1330075, are licensed loan originators with Highlands Residential Mortgage Limited, NMLS 134871. The views expressed by the speakers on the following program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Highlands Residential Mortgage Limited, nor are they necessarily endorsed by Highlands Residential Mortgage Limited. Now, in the studio, local mortgage experts Tina Mitchell and Keelan Harvey.
Welcome to The Money Hour on 1150 AM KKNW. I am your host, Tina Mitchell.
And I'm your co-host, Keelan Harvey.
Bringing in expert advice and inside knowledge on today's events and how they affect your economy. If you're hearing our show at a different time or day, you are listening to a rebroadcast. But we're here to answer any questions or connect you with the guests that we have on the show today. Please call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And our lineup for today's show, we have Dee Gupta of Dee Coaching, Letting Go of Anger or Frustration. Also in studio, we have Dan Putnam of Rain City Supercars. Let's talk cars, money, and keeping it real. Our last guest in studio today is Jake Haynes of Action Tax Services, LLC. Too many self-employed individuals and small business owners are overpaying taxes. Great information on today's show. And as always, we have amazing guests. For more information on the topic discussed today, please call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And let's start out today's show just as we do each week with a little bit of money chat.
Money. Money.
All righty, Keelan, what are you bringing to money chat today?
Well, it's like a holiday today because you look at the ground and we don't have any snow. Yes.
I know. I'm kind of happy and kind of sad.
I know. When it first comes down, I'm like super excited about it. But I have a new perspective now being a parent.
Yeah.
And then the holiday and then the which school is closed. And I've talked to a bunch of other parents. And it's funny. It's like a clique that everybody's like mad about secretly. They're like, I can't wait for our kids to go back to school. And then just because we want normality, like I love my daughter, but like we have things to do in this world,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And it really puts a huge burden. And I've learned a pretty good lesson between that. And then she catches the flu and then it snows. So I've been through like this 3 week of
Does
crazy.
That mean she didn't get to go outside and build a snowman?
Oh, no, we built the monstrosity of a snowman.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold her in like that, but it's really interesting to see the kind of dichotomy of Seattle and the snow and how that really just literally shuts the city down. Like everybody panics and freaks out. And it was so cold, and I think they underestimated how much snow we were going to get.
Yeah.
And but the snow is gone. Life resumes. And I've already talked to a couple parents, and literally the first thing coming out of their mouth is celebrating the fact that life goes back to normal.
Yes.
Our kids go back to school. We can go back to work and not have the extras. So shout out to all the parents out there and for kind of putting up with this. Well, I had a threefer. Most of them had a twofer with the holiday and the snow.
Yeah.
But life is resuming normal as usual. And good on everybody and parents for being good parents and taking care of your little ones.
I second that. I love that. Yeah, we're elevation's 500 feet up in Newcastle. And I tell you, it's crazy. It was definitely a sheet of ice. And the scary thing is the kids are all out there sledding down those the ice when we've got people trying to drive to get out of the cul-de-sac. So it was
it's
pretty steep in there. You've been over to my house.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. So anyways, well, I thought I'd bring in today Money Chat to talk. We're heading into a new decade. So today I thought I'd share back to the 70s with interest rates to give a little perspective of what's gone on with the last decade and, you know, kind of the benefit of where we're at today. So if we go back to the 70s, the lowest rate was in 1972 at 7.23%. Now, the highest rate was 1979 at 12.90%. You're gonna say ouch even more, as you know, as I get in these decades. So rates rose during the great inflation. That's what happened in the 70s. Now, if we move to the 80s, the lowest rate in 1987 was 9.03 and the highest interest rate in 1981 at 18.63%.
People complain now. Could you imagine buying a home at 18% interest rate?
It's so crazy. Goodness. So rates fell after the historical peak in 1981. And then we go to the 90s. The lowest rate was in 1998 at 6.49%. The highest rate was 1990 at 10.67%. So the rates held relatively flat with a stable economy. Then we go into the 2000. Lowest rate was in 2009 at 4.71%. The highest rate in 2000 at 8.64%. So rates fell to historical lows, obviously, because of the financial meltdown. So going into 2010s, the lowest rate was in 2012 at 3.31%. And the highest rate was in 2010 at 5.21%. Rates continued to decrease and held at their historical lows. So if we look at the historical low interest rate was 2012 at 3.31%, the highest 1981 at 18.63%. So the average rate over the last 10 years was 4.69%. So it's just really interesting as we look at the last decade, historical rates was the norm. So it'll be interesting when we get into a new decade, whether that's this decade or the next decade, where our norm goes back to a historical norm, which is not these low interest rates that we see. Now, the lowest the rates have been in the last few years was in 2009, was 2019 at the lowest was 3.625. The average rate today, not quoting interest rates, there's a lot of different factors that have to do with rates, but the average is 3.81%. So again, the lowest in the last few years is 3.625. We're at an average of 3.81. So call to action, we've said this a lot over the last decade, but it's just so true that, you know, with the cost of money so low, it's a great time to get out there. Take a look at your options for refinancing. If you've got a percent or higher than what the average rate that I'm talking about today, if you're looking at being a first-time home buyer, getting out of rent, what about purchasing that second home or that property, vacation property, you can spend time with your family, or investment. We're going to actually talking about investment in cars today with our second guest. Keelan's really excited about that. But always, real estate's a great investment as well. And that's your Money Chat for the day. Coming up next on the Money Hour, let's go and talk about anger or frustration. Dee Gupta of Dee Coaching right here on 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
Every 19 minutes, another baby is born addicted to drugs due to a dramatic increase in opioid use. Referrals to CPS are increasing, as are mental health issues in children. And teen suicide is now at a 30-year high. And for thousands of children and families, things are getting worse. Childhood trauma and adversity are a national epidemic that impact all of us, financially and morally, directly and indirectly. They're the root cause of the most urgent and costly problems that plague our communities, proven to increase poor school performance, incarceration, diabetes, suicide, heart disease, stroke, and cancer. That's five of the top 10 leading causes of death. Why aren't we doing more about it? Fortunately, Child Haven is. Child Haven is a 110-year-old organization that's preventing childhood trauma and adversity and helping heal children and families when it does occur. How are we doing this? Through a wraparound continuum of care tied together by relational health, the best predictor of lifelong well-being. But Child Haven can't do it alone. We must infuse relational health everywhere children live, learn, and play. If you're ready to address the root causes instead of applying Band-Aid fixes, we invite you to join us on this crusade. Visit childhaven.org or call 206-957-4806. That's childhaven.org.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Money Hour with Tina Mitchell and Keelan Harvey.
You're listening to The Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, and co-host, Keelan Harvey, on Alternative Talk AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage experts, Tina Mitchell and Keelan Harvey.
Welcome back to The Money Hour on 1150 AM KKNW. I am your host, Tina Mitchell.
And I'm your co-host, Keelan Harvey.
Your local mortgage experts. It's a great day to talk about money. That's what the show is all about, how to make money, save money, so you can have a better quality of life for you and your family. If you're hearing our show at a different time or day, you are listening to a rebroadcast, but we're here to connect you with our guests that we have on the show today. Please call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. In studio right now, coming back once again, we have Dee Gupta of Dee Coaching, letting go of anger and frustration. Dee, welcome back into studio.
Thank you, Tina.
And a little bit about Dee. Dee is a part-time coach and full-time rental property business owner who has done extensive study on emotional growth. Her perspective is that you are where you are, where you choose to be in your life. Your financial status, the quality of life that you live, and your relationships with friends, family, and significant other, everything is either where you want it to be or where you believe your belief levels is where you can be. The stage of personal growth you are at in each area of your life determines where that you are at in that area. You cannot make more money than you believe that you can make. You cannot have a better relationship than you believe yourself capable of having. And your belief in your own worthiness in each area of your life sets the tone for where you are. Dee helps break down those ceilings. Dee, always exciting to have you come in. Always have a really great and special topic to talk about. And thanks again for being here.
Thank you, Tina. I'm excited to be here.
So, Dee, anger or frustration? I know they're kind of, feels like they accompany each other. It's, I don't know what comes first. Are you angry, frustrated, frustrated, anger? What's the difference between anger and frustration?
Well, I would say anger is a little bit of a stronger feeling, and anger is a feeling that is more outward, that somebody else or some other situation was not up to what we wanted to be, or it was wrong for us, and it took away from something that we had. So it's an intense dislike for an external situation or a person, and frustration is when we are trying to do something and we feel that we have let ourselves down in some way, so it's more inward directed.
So, Dee, knowing that this feeling does not feel well, why do people feel anger and frustration? Why can't they just stop it?
Yes, that would be so simple, right? We feel these feelings when we're trying to live a certain standard of life and we're not able to maintain that standard because there is something around us in our environment, people or person or situation that is stopping us from achieving that, or at least creating a little bit of a block for that.
So I know often when somebody makes me angry, then I get frustrated, and then you keep replaying it in your mind, right? And then you're getting more frustrated. Why do we kind of replay these scenarios in our minds and kind of let them live out and reside within us?
We do this because we don't know how to handle these situations. We're constantly replaying them in our minds, trying to convince ourselves that we are right and the other person is wrong. And it usually doesn't help because we know, our subconscious knows, our soul knows that that's not the case. Our soul knows that we are in control, but we are trying to make the other person responsible and we're giving them the control, and that makes us feel sad, and we're just constantly trying to resolve that situation. So even though the mind is pretending to resolve that situation by thinking about it over and over and over again, and sometimes working ourselves up into a frenzy, our souls see through that trick, and we can hold on to this anger for like months, days, even lifetimes. Sometimes people will hold on to this anger. The reason for that is because we feel that our self-worth is attacked. And if our self-worth is attacked, that person did not respect me, therefore I do not deserve respect, therefore I do not deserve love. And at the bottom of everything that we do, our basic fear is that we're not lovable and we're not going to be loved.
Yeah, when it comes with frustration, a lot of the frustration coming from within is the frustration you just have in yourself, because isn't a lot of that coming from, you know, not having patience in the process, or coming from the, just like you said, the not good enough and the insecurity of where you might be in your space? Is that correct?
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, so Dee, let's start with, what would be the first step that you would coach someone if they're stuck in this space and dealing with these emotions on a regular basis?
The very first step I would say is to remove yourself from the situation, if possible, just go to the bathroom or something, and start observing allow yourself to feel those feelings and then start observing. This is powerful beyond belief. Like, this is not just something. This is extremely powerful. When you start seeing your anger and dissociating yourself with the anger and saying, I see you, anger, I acknowledge you, I respect that you're there, and I'm going to allow you to feel it, and then observe it and say, I get that you are there and you exist, but I'm not you. So as soon as you start creating that dissociation, you've already moved into a very high, much higher consciousness. So it's, you've separated your soul from your emotions and your mind, and you've already achieved, like, you're going to get through that much, much faster.
And we've talked before with conversations with you, Dee, and I'm a big believer in this, that, you know, just accept all of the feelings that we have, good and bad, because there's going to be a balance of both of them. And so I love what you said is, you know, just take some time away, whether it's an inner conversation you're having with yourself or an exterior because of a conflict that's having with somebody else. Just step away, take a breath, accept that it's there, right. Respect that there's a reason that it's there, and Absolutely. Then you get to decide how you're going to react to that.
Respond.
Right? How you're going to respond to that, yes.
Right.
So, Dee, let's talk about the next thing to do after you let the emotion pass for just a moment.
Once the intensity of the emotion has gone, then you can start working on resolving it. And one of the steps that we do often miss is this step of resolving it. We feel the anger and we may let ourselves get through it and get past it, but unless we resolve it, we're not going to be able to handle the situation again the next time, and it's still going to bother us. So we do want to set standards for our lives, and we don't want people to treat us less than. We have a brand to take care of, right? And if yeah. somebody is taking advantage of us, or if somebody is treating us less than, or if somebody is saying something to us that brings down our brand, we don't want to accept that. At the same time, we don't want to react emotionally. So what we want to do is figure out how to handle the situation. And to do that, it's important to set aside a time and set expectations. It may not be a 5-minute fix. It may take a lifetime to fix mm-hmm. something. Like, I'm never
going to... It's a work
gonna,
in progress.
Right? I'm yeah. never going to feel anything negative again in my life. Mm-hmm. That's going to take your entire life to work through. So if you set aside time for it, it may be 5 minutes, like it may be 30 minutes a week, it may be 4-hour session that you want, like however you want to do it, set aside time for it and ask yourself constantly, how do I resolve this? How do I resolve this? How do I resolve this? And work towards finding the resolution from a calm place, and you will be able to handle that same exact situation much better later on, and you'll just feel much better about yourself.
Yeah, and isn't it true, Adi? I'm just like totally cutting off Keelan from jumping in the conversation here, but isn't it true to through part of that process of resolving it is pay attention to how you're feeling, what your
right.
body's telling you, and you can tell whether that resolve is getting you to a good place
Absolutely.
Or if it's a conflict
yes.
that you're having and trying
yes.
to not be authentic with that resolve, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. If the resolution is, I'm never going to talk to this person because this person is a horrible person or whatever,
yeah.
then you are going to feel bad because you know that that's not true. And
yes.
even if the person did something that's not good, you can handle it in a much better way, usually.
Yeah, and it may be the best and right thing to do, but
right.
you're not ready to go that far in
right.
the right direction, so you have to maintain a level of integrity with that space as well.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that. It's like your brain's trying to compartmentalize it, and but we have the control of our dialogue, and that's really what you're talking about, is controlling
right.
your dialogue. And naturally, we want to come up with a story on our brain. How does this fit with my identity?
Right.
And when you can control that dialogue and how you compartmentalize that, and to set some time aside is so smart, where you can actually think through it and allow yourself to let it go, because there's no point in holding on to it.
Right. And resolve it.
Resolve it, right? Because
right.
it's not doing you any service
right.
in your future. It's behind you. So now it's
And then
time.
Remember how you resolved it next time, because
right?
once you figured out how
right.
to resolve it with yourself, now that's a proven pattern that you can continue
right.
to use.
Right. Because yeah. now you have created, you've prepared for the next situation. Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
you're just going to repeat the next situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, just compound. So, Dee, we talked about anger and the differences between anger and frustration. Let's talk about some of the similarities.
They both happen because we're not living the life up to our own standards and because we do not feel in control of the situation, which is where this comes in, that we need to set aside time to figure out how to resolve it. And because, yeah, we don't know how to handle it again if it happens. So I am a very big believer in examples. So I'm going to just give a very brief example.
Okay.
There was somebody who was a guest in my house. He was an Airbnb guest of mine. And I brought these lots of big packets of snacks and I'd kept them in the kitchen. And he had started taking them a little bit. And I was going on a road trip without asking me, and he would tell me later on. So then I was going on a road trip and I put a lot of those snacks in my car because I was going to have them in the car. Mm-hmm. And I left one unopened bag in the kitchen. And this guy asked me, can I have snacks? And I said, oh no, I've put them in the car and I'm going on a road trip. He said, no, I see that one there. And he went there, he took it, and he just took it. Like I didn't. And I was just so upset. I could not sleep at night. I, for some reason.
Don't take snacks from Dee's house.
It made me so mad for some reason. I was like, why are you doing this? And it was not about him at all. This is what I realized later on. Mm-hmm. It was because I completely felt out of control in the situation and I did not feel respected. So what I did the next day is, I set up this time for myself. Like, how do I handle the situation? This was the next morning. I was pacing up and down in my living room for 2 hours figuring out, how do I handle the situation? How do I handle the situation? I don't know.
You can see Dee in studio. Her face is turned a little bit red right now.
She's getting red as we sit here.
And it was a very, like, I don't know. How would you handle that situation? Uh-huh. Okay, so the simple answer, the answer that I came up with eventually was simply say no.
Mm.
Because I came up with an excuse, and instead of coming up with an excuse, I should have just simply said no.
Yeah.
If I was not comfortable with it, and if I was comfortable with it, that's different, but I was not in that situation, and I should have just simply said no. And I would not have come to that conclusion if I hadn't spent those 2 hours literally intensely thinking about how do I handle. And now I'm comfortable because now I know that if anything like that happens, I can say yes or no. And it sounds very obvious in hindsight, right? But at that time, it wasn't obvious to me.
And that's a really good example. And to each of us, our boundaries are going to be different. And so you really need to respect your boundaries and what those are. And you have to be able to communicate your boundaries in the best respectful way, because somebody else is having another feeling on the other side. So you've got to kind of play with your outcome and see if it's working for you. So I think that goes right into my next question, Dee, because majority of all of these feelings, the negative feelings that we have, it is all attached to ourself, correct?
Absolutely, yes. It is. It all comes down to self-worth. It all comes down to this feeling of unlovability. And if we are separate from other people and other people don't love us, then we will not survive, because human beings cannot survive alone.
Yeah.
And so this is all down to the survival instinct. And we human beings are a meaning-making machine, and we're constantly judging good or bad, negative or positive. It doesn't matter. We're constantly judging. And we will not judge a tree if we see a tree outside there, because it doesn't matter to us. It can be tall or short or whatever. But we will judge other human beings, and that's because we are directly affected by that.
So, Dee, unfortunately, we're running out of time here, but before we do, I want to make sure that our listeners can get a hold of you. So, if for anybody that's looking to get in contact with Dee and to get some coaching, how do they get a hold of you?
They can contact me on the phone number 425-894-2308 or go to dee.coach. That's dee.coach.
Wonderful. Dee, thanks again for coming in. It's always a pleasure to have a conversation with you.
Thank you so much, Tina.
Coming up next on the Money Hour, let's talk cars, money, and keeping it real. Dan Putnam of Rain City Supercars right here at 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
Are you a tech professional who wants to get your voice heard in meetings and events? Are you tired of being invisible or of people talking over you? Do you believe you have the talent to make more impact at work but don't know how or where to begin? Are you living on autopilot not knowing where your time has gone? Or do you want to make the best use of your time on this planet? To have a powerful voice in this world, you need to build up your communication skills and courage step by step. To live your life in a powerful way, you need to have crystal clear goals and work through problems along the way until you achieve those goals. Dee Gupta of Dee Coaching is an expert at unleashing your personal power and will coach you through a simple and easy-to-follow process that will build up your skills and courage. Dee is passionate about firing people up to follow their dreams by walking them through her effective proprietary process of goal setting and follow-through.
This is Dee from Dee Coaching. To learn more about me, visit my website at speakpowerfullycoaching.com and follow the links to connect with me on social media.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Money Hour with Tina Mitchell and Keelan Harvey.
You're listening to The Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, and co-host, Keelan Harvey, on Alternative Talk AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage experts, Tina Mitchell and Keelan Harvey.
Welcome back to The Money Hour at 1150 AM KKNW. I am your host, Tina Mitchell.
And I'm your co-host, Keelan Harvey.
We are local mortgage experts. We are here to help you build a strong financial blueprint one week and one show at a time. If you're hearing our show at a different time or day, you are listening to a rebroadcast. If you'd like to connect with the guests that we have on the show today, please call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150. Or online at themoneyhour.com. In studio right now, first-time guest, we have Dan Putnam of Rain City Supercars. And we're going to talk about cars, money, and just keeping it real. Dan, thank you so much for coming in and joining us.
Thank you for having me on the show today.
And a little bit about Dan. Dan and his co-host, Nicholas, who couldn't join us today in studio, maybe next time you come in, he can come, run a podcast highlighting the people intertwined in the very unique PNW car culture around the world. His show highlights the one degree of separation everyone has in the car world and how small the world really is. His show features guests ranging from former Seahawk Cliff Averill, by the way, he was my next door neighbor, to the world authority on all things wine, Madeline Puckett, and everyone in between. With over 10,000 listeners a week, and most of them not being car people, they share the great stories of amazing people they have met, give tips on car ownership and road trips, and focus on keeping people real and authentic about who they really are.
Dan, I'm so excited about this. Keelan's
gleaning.
Yeah, I'm like glowing right now.
He's glowing.
Three things I'm super passionate about: cars, money, and keeping it real. So I love this. I'm going to make sure that Angela listens into this one because I've been just prying on her for my Porsche. But then I had a kid and we were talking about this before the show and the car seat doesn't fit back in the 911 so well. So anyways, Dan, talk to us a little bit about, I'm really curious about this, failures that you commonly see in the exotic car world, because they come in all types and flavors and sizes and all kinds of things. Some are better than others.
Yeah, well, because this is a money show, I thought I would talk about that part of it, because it's what I see the most. So I help host exotics at Redmond Town Center. I do Monterey Car Week. I'm usually in Scottsdale this week for Car Week down there, and I meet a lot
of... Is that where Nicholas is at?
That's where Nicholas is at right now, hosting a Jet Center event down there.
How fun.
Yeah, a ton of fun.
And your life is good.
I have a ton of fun, and I have... there's nothing about it that sucks. It's great being in the car world. The vast majority of people I meet are amazing and have great stories.
Yeah.
But one of the most common things I see, especially with all the new money in town, you get guys that'll come in, they get their great new tech job, they get their nice big bonus check, poof, all gone on that McLaren they wanted their entire life, or that Lamborghini or that Ferrari. Yeah. And I have a lot of friends that work there, but... it's funny because, you know, when you're a kid and you're dreaming of a car, you're willing to extend yourself so much to live paycheck to paycheck to get that car.
Mm.
And at that time, it's a small thing. It's like maybe it's a, you know, if you're from a small town up here, it's a used Camaro or something. The same thing happens to adults, though. They'll go in and they will live paycheck to paycheck on a $200,000 a year income to have that car they want.
That's crazy.
And they're not impressing anybody.
Yeah.
Because all the guys that have been doing this for a long time are like, that was a terrible choice. that, you know, $200,000 car you just bought is worth $100,000 as soon as you roll it off the lot. And that's the sad truth. You'll see guys lease for $3,000 to $4,000 a month.
Yikes.
And I see it all the time. This is not rare. And
that's crazy.
It's a scary repetitive pattern. So that's what we talk about a lot on our show, is keeping it real. And it's like, No, there's a reason I buy used supercars.
Yes,
I don't,
yeah.
I you know, hey, if you have the luxury to buy new, by all means, I totally get ordering exactly the car you want, rolling it up to your door like a present. But it's like you have to take a real hard, authentic look at yourself and where you're at in life to do that.
Makes sense. Yeah. So let's talk about the right budget for a car if you're a car enthusiastic.
If you're an enthusiast like me, I do say there is a return on investment in joy in keeping a car like that. You are going to be willing to extend yourself a little further than most people. And I won't guilt somebody for that. I mean, from the financial planner side of it, you're like gritting your teeth going, no, don't do that. That's that's a little bit out of budget for you. You shouldn't spend that much. But for me, like my favorite thing to do in the world is road trips. I host rallies down to Monterey and across the country. And I love that stuff. So for me, there's a little bit more of my money that goes into my cars than most people. So I would say it's sort of the same rules that apply to buying any car, then maybe add another 5%, another 10%.
Okay.
I don't want to play anybody's banker, but I also don't want to come down too hard on somebody who spent a little more than probably their financial planner thinks they should.
Yeah.
Because if you are not a car person and not an enthusiast, you're not seeing that joy return on investment. For me, it's like I will eat out less. I shop differently because of the car I have. And so it's not that I'm overspending on the car. It's that I'm reducing my budget in other areas.
That's your true passion. So you're putting your extra resources there where someone else's true passion is going to be somewhere else. So don't spend that kind of money on a car because you're, makes total sense.
Yeah. If your passion is, you know, Louis Vuitton handbags and cars, then you might have a problem on a limited income.
Exactly.
But if
you're
willing to cut out one of those other ones, then it's, you're in a much safer space.
I agree with that, Dan. I mean, if you drive your car a lot, especially, I mean, if I spend a good chunk of change, and that's my I'm already selling it right now. My justification on it, you know, I get happy in a car that's got some performance and it puts a smile on my face every single day. And I mean, some people I've heard, my fiance is in property management. There's a guy that lives at the apartments with a Lambo.
Yeah.
And literally, and he has a McLaren. Now, the kid's balling, but he's living in an apartment driving a Lambo and a McLaren.
That
literally,
is
it's
so
sitting in our garage
crazy.
Right now, a white Huracana or whatever they are.
Yep.
Yeah, so
and not to judge, but being in the mortgage industry, I just don't get that. You know, being a homeowner before having, but no judgment here.
I mean, absolutely backwards, right? No matter how you cut it, it's a depreciating asset, and it's just all comes down to how big of a chomp you want to make out of that. Mm. So. And I know the answer to this, Dan. I had a question for you about making money on cars. I did it small time. I used to flip cars. I used to, like, back in the day, and I worked at an auction for many years.
Very cool.
And, so I got to see the dealer auctions and kind of how that works. But so you can make money, but you got to be smart about what you're doing, I should say. So what is your feedback on making money on cars?
The very high level but almost always correct answer to this is no.
Yeah,
it's pretty much never. Unless you are dealing with extremely limited market vehicles and you have the money up front, like if you have an extra $100,000 to spare right now, buy a Ferrari 360 and a manual. Do it right now and sit on it for 10 years. You'll make triple your money back.
Wow.
But is that really a good investment compared to property?
Sure.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Like $100,000 on a car and then getting it up to $200,000 10 years later is a very slow return investment on your money.
Yes.
Most of the people that are doing it and making good money at this are doing it in volume.
Yeah.
That's why Park Place is down at Scottsdale right now with like 100 cars. They're going to lose money on probably 20% of those. But if they're making money on 80%,
makes sense.
They're making a lot of money. But they're doing it in high volume, high return. And it's a risky business. I've seen a lot of people fail at it. We can go into things like the bull market and like how to buy a collector car. It's like I always tell everybody, the car you really wanted when you were a kid, the limited production model of that car will eventually come back in value. Weird things like the Corrados and the CRX SIs and the Integra Type R. Like Integra Type Rs were 40 new and they're 70 used now.
It's crazy.
But still, that's a 20-year investment to get $30,000 back.
Yeah.
So when we're talking money, that's not that great of a deal.
No.
If you're a car guy who wants to have a fun car and make a little money and not go upside down,
that's the crazy thing for me is having an expensive car that you're looking for an investment, but actually being out there driving it on the road.
Right?
You know?
Exactly. I've got 47,000 miles on my 911 Turbo S. I bought it with 27. There's no way I'm making money back on my car.
Yes,
and
exactly.
I knew that going into it. I was just dumping
money. It's all about the passion about the car.
Yeah.
So, Dan, what cars are a safe bet for investments in fun versus investments money-wise?
Well, it depends if you want to collect and show or if you want to collect and drive.
Okay.
So right now, our friends at Hagerty put out their bull market. I tell everybody to go to that every year. If there's one of the people that tend to get it right, it's the insurance companies, because they care about your car investment more than you do 100 times over.
Sure.
Because if they total it, you know, they got to adjust their rates accordingly.
Uh-huh.
Basically, any exotic car, and I mean true exotic, if you've got a... want to create a very clear difference here. I had a Corvette Z06, not an exotic. Really fun car, but it's a mass production vehicle. But if you've got an Italian with a manual transmission, it's going to go up. Pretty much safe investment across the board is any Ferrari that was vintage and popular and in low production is going to go up. Rare cars that everybody hated at the time always go up. When I say that, I mean like the Porsche.
Interesting.
The Porsche 914. My brother had one of those when I was a kid, and he bought it, I think, for $1,500.
Oh, my God.
I think he sold it for $3,000. And because most of them went to rot, people tossed them away and forgot about them. Now there's not a lot of them out there. And even though at the time they were like the blasphemy of Porsches, they've skyrocketed in value. Now they're $20,000, $30,000. If you're lucky enough to have a 914-6 wide body, you're at $100-plus.
That's
so
crazy.
Limited production, manual transmission, typically imported. Although the Viper GTS is a great example of a car that's rocketing right now.
So they quit making those, right?
Yep. That was the last year for them. It was last year.
Oh, I feel a little out of the conversation. I don't know any of the, I mean, I know what a Porsche is, but all the extra stuff after the Porsche.
It's in the same vein, though.
It's a guy thing, I guess.
You got the Jaguar, which is a beautiful.
That's all I know, but my dream is, my dream's a little Bentley.
Oh.
But yeah,
I love the Jag. Luxury.
Uh-huh.
So I've modded cars my entire life, Dan, including my fam. I got like, I wanted I got an Infiniti G37 four-door sedan. It's the XS all-wheel drive. It's like 335 horsepower.
Yeah,
it's a 370Z motor and it's starving for air. So I gave it high flow cats, cold air intake, exhaust and tune. Which
you sound so smart.
I'm a car guy. Yeah, lowered it a little bit so I can still put my kid back in it, and it's, you know, to it's it'll drive forever. Those motors, they
bulletproof motor.
Bulletproof, yeah. So that's fun. But after I did it, I was like, this is probably, I know it's not a good investment because it cost me about $7,000 to do all that. And I'm not going to receive a dollar back from that. So what is your take on modding in general? Can you make, I mean, are there good investments with modding?
Yes, but for the most part, no, you're exactly right. I always tell everybody it's a great investment in your own fun in your car if you're an enthusiast, but there's a running joke in the industry. If we go, there's even a Facebook group about joke ads we find on Craigslist.
Yeah.
And the key word is anytime we see somebody put investment in the ad, we know that thing is worthless. $40,000 invested, I'm like, not worth a dime to the next buyer. But there is, I'm going to talk about the French cases where that is a good investment. Future collector cars like the C6 Z06, which all 427 Corvettes go up in value eventually. It's usually much later, but they are known to have bad heads. And so running aftermarket heads and valve guides will alleviate that issue. And to the next buyer, that's a huge win because you've modified the engine.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like it would be a good investment, but it is. When you're modifying for reliability, the next buyer looks at it as an investment in their future. Things like wheels and tires, no, almost never.
Yeah.
they look cool. The Jeep market may be a weird fringe of that where we're seeing that go up, but for the most part, modding is no, and it is sort of a running joke. Yeah. If you've modded your car a lot, take it all off, sell it all separately, then sell your car otherwise. That's how you get your money back out of that.
That cracks me up because I look at Craigslist 24/7, and it's funny how they list every single
mod. Not 24/7. You've got other things that you're doing.
I do. Well, on my free time, right, I'm always looking on Craigslist, and they'll like list everyone and the price they paid market for each thing, and then add it to the total of what they think they should sell the car to you for. And you're just like, what? Like, no.
Yeah. No low balls.
Yeah, no low balls. Don't, if you don't like it, don't call me. It's like, well, it's still there like 4 months later, the same ad.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Dan, I can't help but just ask you, what is the very best car that you have ever owned?
The best car I've ever owned, hands down, is my current car. It's the first car I've ever bought where I'm going to replace it with the exact same car.
Okay.
I've never said that before in my life, and I've owned at least 30 cars. Right now, I own a Porsche 911 Turbo S.
All right.
And so it took me a while to get there. I've always been a Porsche fan, but the hype is real. I've got to say, I've driven everything under the sun. And being in the car world, you get handed to the keys of things I will never own or afford in my life, and I'm very fortunate in that way. But it does everything. I've had it out in the snow all this week. I've got snow tires on it. I've taken it over the pass. I did. Went up to Suncadia for lunch. No problem.
Wow.
Yeah, and Victoria, our director of marketing, has got a Porsche.
Yes.
What kind of Porsche does she have?
Cayman S.
Yeah. But the between the all-wheel drive and the twin turbo, it's got all the horsepower I want. It's got room in the back. I mean, nobody's fitting in the back seats, but it does give you storage room. So you can pack for a good 2-week road trip and you're fine.
Awesome.
That's so cool. So Dan, I'm curious to know, and I mean, we all buy new cars and they offer you everything under the sun as far as like extras that you can get from like insurance plans and all kinds of stuff. Is a dealer ripping you off? Like what's worth it and what's not worth it? What should you stray away from? What should you actually partake in? I mean, what's the answer?
The short answer is typically no. They're relying on the buyer to be very lazy. And that's how they're making their money. In fact, prepaid maintenance, if you're good about your car, is actually a really good investment. And I know that because I know a lot of technicians who hate doing prepaid maintenance because they don't get paid as much.
Yeah.
But it does save you a lot of money, and it does keep your car better for the next buyer. It will add resale value. Now, if you're leasing, totally different story. You're getting into that car, you're driving that car, you're giving it back and saying, peace out.
Yes, yeah.
I highly recommend doing nothing.
Yeah.
Pay for it, drive it, take care of it, and then send it back. That's it.
Makes total sense.
But if you're doing the smart financial planning, as a lot of people would say, is to buy it and drive it, take care of it, then that prepaid maintenance and that extended warranty might be a good idea for you if you are that type of person. But I always tell everybody the caveat here is be honest with yourself. Are you really? Because I go through a car about every 2 to 3 years, which is a terrible investment, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, mine's every 10 years. I literally drive my Jag for 10 years, get a new one, and I love it.
Yeah, much smarter investment there to do that. But the only other thing I'd say is paint protection film in this area. That's the one thing I tell everybody is worth the money no matter what you drive. We have so much wet gravel on our roads around here. That stuff just peppers your paint.
Yeah.
So get paint protection film. Dealer installed is almost never the way to go. There's a lot of places around here that it's install is everything.
Okay.
So you're getting what you pay for there. You're going to find some high-end places. They're going to charge you like $10,000 on exotic to install that stuff. It's going to not look like it was ever there. And then you're going to get the real cheap stuff. The guy's going to be like, oh, I'll do it for $1,000. It'll look like you paid a lot less.
Yeah.
It's going to look like you put scotch tape on the front of your car and called it a day. I've seen that many times.
Oh my gosh.
Awesome, Dan. Well, thank you so much. It was really great. I have to say, this is the first time that we've had a guest come in and talk about cars, and I loved it. Well, I think Keelan loved it even a little bit more.
Yeah, he's going to be here every month now.
Dan, thank you so much. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
And coming up next in the Money Hour, too many self-employed individuals and small business owners are overpaying taxes. Jake Haynes of Action Tax Services, LLC, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, after this short break.
Are you a small business owner? Did you overpay the IRS last year? Don't think as a small business, you're stuck with big taxes. It's possible you're paying more than you have to. Call me, Jake Haynes, at Action Tax Team today and avoid overtaxation. I've helped small business owners save more than $3.6 million they otherwise would have paid simply by using little-known IRS strategies. Call 253-288-8829 for your personal consultation. ActionTaxTeam.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Money Hour with Tina Mitchell and Keelan Harvey.
You're listening to The Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, and co-host, Keelan Harvey, on Alternative Talk AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage experts, Tina Mitchell and Keelan Harvey.
Welcome back to The Money Hour on 1150 AM KKNW. I am your host, Tina Mitchell.
And I'm your co-host, Keelan Harvey.
You're our local mortgage experts. We bring in studio each week the best of the best experts in all arenas regarding your money. We're here to help you in today's economy. If you're hearing our show at a different time or day, you are listening to a rebroadcast. You can call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150. Or online at themoneyhour.com, and we'll connect you with the guests that we have on the show today. Our next guest and our last guest, also first guest and first time in studio, is Jake Haynes of Action Tax Services, LLC. Too many self-employed individuals and small business owners are overpaying taxes. Jake, welcome for the first time in studio.
Well, thank you. Welcome. I'm glad to be here. It's nice to come in and share some of these highlights about, well, first about your book, Tina.
Oh, thank you.
You have a great book about Journey With Me.
Yeah.
And it looks like it talks about, you know, goal setting and planning your future.
It does. It's a journey in life and how I got to my personal and professional core practices. Thank you for that shout out, Jake.
Very definitely.
You
know, in all my life, I've been a big time goal setter and entrepreneur. And this book, I've got to have it. it will resonate.
Oh, well, let me know what you think. Thank you so much, fellow author. And a little bit about Jake as an entrepreneur. Jake has been coaching business owners for more than 14 years in every facet of operating and growing their business. He has succeeded as well as failed in business. Jake lived the first 40 years of his life with epilepsy, enduring thousands of seizures, yet amid all of the inherent challenges, he reached great heights, including summiting the five highest peaks in Washington and building several successful businesses. Now cured of epilepsy, he continues to succeed by goal setting and achieving every day. As a CPA, business coach, and entrepreneur, he serves the needs of hundreds of business owners as his firm at Action Tax Services, LLC in Auburn.
Look at you, Jake. Way to go. Summiting all the highest peaks. That's quite the feat.
Well, when I was 16 years old, I got to summit the Mount Rainier as an award for becoming an Eagle Scout. My scoutmaster took me up there, and I had a massive seizure on the summit. Almost died.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a sad experience. And so once I was cured of epilepsy, which is, you got to have me on the show again. I got to tell you the story. It's absolutely amazing.
I'm sure that it is.
Yeah, but I was cured in a miraculous way, and I knew exactly what I needed to do, and that was to go climb that mountain again. And we prepped, and we climbed several mountains around here, and then did that summit. And yeah, I've owned a lot of businesses, and just, it's kind of unique. I'm the CPA that's an entrepreneur, and most of them are bean counters, right?
Yeah.
But I'm the entrepreneur, and so it is so exciting to work with so many business owners all over the Northwest and help them not only save tax dollars, because, you know, I'm the evil guy who just can't stand the IRS, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to make sure that we don't pay them any more than we have to, kind of thing, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, we don't break the law, but we bend it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so... So anyway, you know, it's so much fun to do that. And then to help those business owners take their business to the next level. And they read my book as part of our coaching. And then we go on and coach, and we help them in every way to be the best business that they can, the number one business in their industry.
Love that.
So speaking of overpaying the IRS, why are small business owners overpaying the IRS?
You know, most small business owners don't get the advice that they need. The number one thing that a small business owner that is profitable should be doing is setting up an S corporation.
Yeah.
And they don't know about it. They don't do it. They pay self-employment tax, and sometimes they pay a lot of self-employment tax. You know, one of those categories that has a lot of that happening is real estate agents. You know, they don't necessarily have a lot of expenses. And they, you know, they might make 40, 80, 120, 250,000, whatever, right? And they're just going along. They're busy as can be. And finally, so many of them come in and sit down and talk to me, and they're looking at a $10, $20, $30,000 tax bill. And it's so exciting to help them cut that in half.
Yeah, I bet. What a great service to be able to provide. So let's talk about, what does it take to set up a corporation, Jake?
So it's one thing to set up an LLC, a limited liability company.
Mm-hmm. And I got a couple of those.
Yes, and that's a state structure. The thing that you must do is you must set it up to be taxed at the federal level as an S corporation, okay? That makes the profit passive income, not earned income that is subject to self-employment tax, right? So that's the main thing you do, and you do that by working with both state and federal authorities to do it. But here's where it gets awesome, okay? Your listeners right now are listening to this saying, oh, you know, I made a lot of money this last year, and they're thinking they're going to come in, and I'm going to say set up an S corporation. It's going to be effective as of the day they come in and visit me.
Yeah.
No. The reality is that they can set up their entity to be retroactively effective for a prior year.
Really?
Ooh, right. So they come in and they're like, last year I made $150,000 and you know, and what do? I need write-offs, you know? And the first thing we're saying is, well, you need to be an S corporation for last year.
Yeah.
Now, interesting rule. The IRS recently said that you do not get the same authorization that you used to have to elect an entity retroactively. So what our firm has done is pre-created entities to help them. In other words, I have a shell company that I sell to you, and I say, here's what you need to be taxed as an S corporation. And we just transfer ownership into them, their name, and boom, they're an S corporation.
You are a creative CPA.
Yes.
Love that.
Look at you.
Well, it's a lot of fun. You know, taxes aren't fun historically, right? I'm like,
well,
like
anything's
this weird
fun
geek,
when
right?
you can help save money.
That's
and,
right.
You know, you've got a passion in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you're already a corporation? Is there a possibility that you're overpaying still?
Uh-huh. You know, the number one thing that that shareholders in an S corporation are doing is they're taking a salary that is exorbitant. They are led to believe that the only money they can take out of a corporation is the salary that they receive. But that is in fact not the case, because they can take shareholder distributions. The IRS says you are required to take a reasonable salary for your position. So question, what's reasonable?
Yeah, who decides that?
That's a gray area.
That's right. Because if you make $100,000 in profit, right, and you take a $100,000 salary, well, you just paid self-employment tax on all of your profit, just like a sole proprietorship, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a $100,000 salary and you take no salary and pay no self-employment tax, hello, IRS, we're going to audit you, right?
Yeah.
So what's the balance? And the balance is real critical. And we look at that and determine what is the right salary to take. And the rest of the income is passive income, not subject to self-employment tax. And people save thousands.
Yeah. So, Jake, let's talk about investments and how investments can help in saving business tax dollars.
Well, you know, at the end of the year, you make an investment in assets and also making sure that you take advantage of every write-off that you can, right? There's certain things you can do at the end of the year to prepare, and also something like a 401k, an IRA, a SEP IRA, a traditional IRA, right? There are a lot of options to offset your taxable income, whether you're an individual or a business owner.
Jake, let's talk a little bit about the coaching side of things. How else does Action Tax Services help with businesses bringing home more money?
Well, you know, we have a coaching program that we've used for the last several years that puts people through a kind of the 12-step process. and we get them from start to finish. We determine these long-term milestones, goals, and this plan, and we put it together. And then we meet on a regular basis, generally once a month, and we start working on those goals. And there is something to say about being held accountable to the goals that 100%. You want to achieve, right? Yeah. Every person should have a coach, right? Whether you're in business, whether you're in whatever professional realm you're in, everyone should have a coach. And I've had a coach for over 20 years, and he holds me accountable, man. You know, I am always held to the fire. And so you want someone that holds you to the milestone. So coaching is really an individual thing, right? It's what do you need in your business? And we get some things very systematized and general about business, and then we get very specific about what are we going to do to help you be the number one most successful business in your industry, if that's what you want.
Yeah.
In our book, the Seven Strategies of Highly Successful Business Owners, in my book, it gives all of those strategies to individuals. It gives everything's there. They can read it and get everything they need. And what we do in coaching is we implement the strategy.
So, Jake, let's talk a little bit about your book a little bit more. If your people are not in the area and they want to get the resources that you have to share in your book, talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so the book, in general, it is a book about having a business coach. It is we give over 350 ways to market your business in the book, and as I am a CPA, it has lots of tax strategies. There's things about business leadership and how to lead in today's business world. It's a great resource. So if you want to become the number one leader in your industry, it gives the formula.
Jake, let me ask you, so why aren't others telling business owners to follow some of these strategies and do the things that you're telling them to do?
You know, there's a lot of strategies. Like, you know, the strategies that are in the book, the most of your CPAs, they're not business coaches, and that's all right. Yeah. You know, if they do taxes, and they may do them wonderfully, right? But when it comes to the strategies of, like, the S corporation, that is like the unanswered question of the decade. Why do people come into me and they were not told, or they were even told by their prior CPA or tax person, oh, you don't need the S corporation? That just blows my mind. I almost can't answer the question. Why don't they, right?
So, Jake, I would love to have you come back in studio and just talk all on this question, because I think it would be a really great topic. But just briefly on a person being able to save money on a real estate investment like 1031 exchange, charitable trust, passive rental income.
Oh, yeah. You know, we set them up.
We could have a show on each one of those individually.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, the 1031 is something we do frequently with, you know, we work with about 500 real estate agents, and we are constantly, you know, working through these 1031 exchanges. Great tool to use, you know, and the charitable trust, it's great for, especially if you're wanting to make charitable contributions, now you're doing it tax-free and getting the tax benefit, you know. Passive rental activity, lots and lots of strategies you can use to create the right kind of tax portfolio you want, or not tax portfolio, but retirement portfolio that you want.
So we'll have Victoria reach out to you, our director of marketing, and get you scheduled for the for three shows for these individual topics, because I think that would be really great to just really focus and talk about those. That's awesome, Jake.
Sounds great. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Well, Jake, we've got time for a couple more questions, but we're running down. I wanted to make sure that people know the name of your book, and how can they get a copy?
So the book is The 7 Strategies of Highly Successful Business Owners. And, you know, it's on Amazon, and we just get on. It's a second edition. And it's plan. We are looking to have it be an Amazon number one bestseller. So it's just it's
I'm
exciting.
Sure it's heading there.
Yes,
so awesome.
We are actually looking and planning for that. If you would like the book, you can of course go on Amazon and get it. It's available as an ebook or as an audiobook or as a paper copy, whatever you'd like. You can also text us at 253-240-4852. That's 253-240-4852, and just simply say book, and we will reply with the appropriate link for you to get a copy of my book.
Love that, Jake. Jake, thank you so much for coming in studio. Really excited to have you back and dial in at a deeper level on some of these topics. And it was great having you here.
Yeah, thank you. And I look so forward to reading your book, Tina.
Thank you so much. And to chat with any of the guests that we had on the show today, please call 1-855-411-1150. Again, that's 1-855-411-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. This is your host, Tina Mitchell, signing out for the day.
And your co-host. I jumped the gun
there. A little early there.
Your co-host. Got
that's
it.
Awesome. You guys have a great weekend. And we'll see you same time, same place, right here on 1150 AM KKNW next weekend.
Tina Mitchell, MLO 145420, and Keelan Harvey, MLO 1330075, are licensed loan originators with Highlands Residential Mortgage Limited, NMLS 134871. The views expressed by the speakers on the preceding program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Highlands Residential Mortgage Limited, nor are they necessarily endorsed by Highlands Residential Mortgage Limited.